that experience of people physically in a space looking at paintings and sculpture and what is going on in their head, and then they're, you know, mingling with these other people that are having their own, they're having their own trip, making them think of past loves or depression or joy or whatever. It's just, it's so amazing because it's so organic and it's so, you know, slightly subconsciously below the surface of people just kind of mingling about, looking at some beautiful things, and regardless of what the artist was trying to convey, these people are internalizing it and making it their own. It's just it's an incredible thing.
Hello and welcome to Tufts Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. We're listening to Gregory Farah of Fahrenheit Fine Arts. He called us from the La Fonda Hotel in Santa Fe last week during Sovereign Santa Fe, a collaboration between Gregory Farah, Tony Abeta, Randy Barton, and Keith Grosbeck, and the La Fonda Hotel. They staged a pop-up exhibition showcasing cutting-edge indigenous creativity. Sovereign's mission is to highlight New School Native American arts and its elusive relationship between traditional and contemporary. These days, we're thinking a lot about space, how human bodies move and interact within space, how to keep people in or keep people out, or how to keep everything sanitized. This also makes us think about how space is important to people who sell things, create things, and, of course, how sharing space with others is an integral part of engaging with art and the world around us. Here's more of my conversation with Gregory Farah. He's talking to us from the La Fonda Hotel in Santa Fe during this year's Sovereign Santa Fe exhibition taking place in the hotel. What's the difference between showing work in a hotel as opposed to showing it in a gallery?
I love being able to have a gallery space that you can, it's day, week after week, and you can tweak it, but it's the same space. You get to know the space, you get to know the vibe, and you really get to make it your own. And I really had to kind of reformulate, because coming down to Santa Fe, this is an expensive town to rent, and to have a good retail gallery space was really something that was completely unrealistic for me, for a small-time dealer that doesn't have Santa Fe gallery money to have a gallery. So what it kind of forced me to do was to do pop-ups, pop-up exhibitions, do shows in other locations. And I've done a lot of that in the last year and a half, 2 years.
Well, I was going to say, so what have you learned from doing pop-up exhibitions?
I learned that, you know, it's a lot more work to do that, because you got to bring in all the work and you got to tweak it and the lighting. But there's pluses and minuses. The cool thing is just the concept of a pop-up, whether it's a pop-up restaurant, a pop-up gallery, a pop-up boutique, retail, it's kind of fast and furious. There's a sense of urgency, both as showing and, you know, potential clients and people purchasing. It's a different kind of energy, you know. It's just me to go into something, to go into someplace really quickly and tweak it and try to kind of show something really beautiful for a short amount of time. It's just a very different vibe.
Well, tell me why or how an exhibition space matters in relation to the art, or does it?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think it's changing ever so fast. Indian Market, the second longest continuously held art exhibition in the country, and this is the first year that they're physically not putting it on. But what are they doing? They're doing it virtually. They're doing it all online. But of course, it's an immensely different experience. I mean, especially for something like Indian Market, which is a market-based art exhibition. Being able to walk around and physically interact and tangibly touch things and look at things in real time is something that can never, ever be replicated virtually.
Over the internet.
And I'm not saying that the virtual world doesn't have its place. I mean, that's a fantastic tool, and it's just going to get better and better and stronger and stronger, you know. But I think the actual exhibition experience, the gallery experience, is something that will never, ever, it cannot be replicated. And there will always be a place for it.
I'm curious what your thoughts are about what the difference is between someone standing alone in a gallery looking at something and somebody standing with others sharing a space and looking at something.
It's not just the looking. It's not just one person in a gallery looking at a painting. when there's two or three people looking at a painting and that maybe they don't even know each other, they might start a conversation. I mean, if you've ever been in a museum or a gallery and you're looking at a piece of art and then someone else drifts in and they start looking at the piece of art and then they kind of look to you and be like, you know, what do you like about it? And then, you know, there's a amazing connection that just happens right then and there. And then not even just that, think of just having an opening, having a gallery show. But one of the greatest things about a gallery opening, a museum exhibition, is it's all walks of life. You get artists. I mean, and this is somewhat in a romantic idea, but it still happens. And you get some of the high heel, you know, uptown crowd, you know, woman with her stilettos and her pearls, and she's sipping champagne. And then you got the artist and maybe some of his friends or her friends that are in their jeans and their paint splattered clothes, and they're drinking a Miller High Life. And you get those two different people, two different socioeconomic, two different kind of themes, you know, some artistic bohemian types with some uptown well-heeled types in a room together talking about art or talking about anything. That is one of the coolest things about the art world. And I mean, of course, I'm detailing a very romanticized, but that happens all the time, is the different walks of life. Art brings people like that together in such a non-forced and a very beautifully organic way.
That was Gregory Farah. In 2010, he began working with the R.C. Gorman Estate in Taos, then opened his own gallery, Fahrenheit Fine Arts, to show up-and-coming younger Native artists. He currently organizes pop-up exhibitions in Santa Fe, Taos, and beyond, and is always looking for new collaborations out there. Let's continue in thinking about space and what it means. I talked with Angelo and Jacqueline McCorse, creators of Bison Star Naturals, a family business that produces skincare products such as soaps, lotions, and salts with ingredients that are indigenous to the American Southwest.
Our bar soaps in particular, they're a functional piece of art, as we like to say. The soap is like the medium that we use to highlight some of the plants that we like to go out and pick. Both of us are really interested in wild harvesting different foods during the course of the year. For example, right now it's hopefully going to be the wild mushroom season. So that's just hobbies that we have, and we have incorporated them into our work. For example, wild harvested mint that we grow at our land into the bar soaps, and it allows it to blend and to really highlight some of the plants that we really like that grow here in Taos.
Starting out in their business, Angelo and Jacqueline have been working out of their home, and in this last year have been constructing a workshop space.
Every single night, all winter long, I think it was in the winter of 2018 that we started to really sit down and think about this. And we would just sit down every single night and draw blueprints. And we started with a singular room that was significantly smaller than what we're doing now. And it transformed into the 1,300 square foot workspace that we now are in the process of building.
Midway through the pandemic, they reimagined the design of the workshop.
At first, we had thought that it would be a place where people can come into and actually see, but then we kind of started looking at other comparable places that have windows to allow for visitors to look in without actually coming into the workspace. So over the course of the evolution of the design, we decided to incorporate really nice large windows that will be going along the longer sides of the building that our visitors can take a peek through and watch the magic in action.
I was thinking about how we're talking about an indoor space, the workshop for making. We're talking about the outdoor space, really nature and how the products are connected to nature. But I have noticed you have an online presence, both on social media and you use a website and you sell your products. So it's like this virtual space, this nature space, and then you know, the space that you've been creating for the business. To me, those are three really kind of different spaces. Do you have any thought or reflection on that or connection, and how do those three spaces fit together?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I think one of our goals is to share that space with everybody, our entire audience, bring everybody along for the journey. And the way that we've been able to do that so far is by documenting our journey on all of these social media platforms. So in the physical space, when we're out harvesting or making our products, or we're just living life, shed hunting, having fun, foraging, we like to document parts of those processes. You know, of course, we're not out there and having our cell phone is the primary reason we're out there or whatever, you know, as far as doing it for the gram. But it's also sometimes hard to remember to grab your phone and capture something. But we love to document our process and journey so that way we can share it with everybody. And everybody can join us with our journey. So that way when all of this, you know, pandemic clears up and everybody can convene again and our space will be, you know, open with our little shop and kind of like our little wild food walk that we have incorporated at our build site. It'll be like you never missed a beat. You know, you'll be there for the entire journey of Bison Star. And then when, you know, it's all complete, you'll be able to come visit, come see.
Are there other connections between what you make and where you live? And I ask that in the sense of, do you feel like you could be anywhere in the world and doing this business, or is it really important that it's here?
To us, it's really important that it's here in Taos, because we really attribute a lot of our support and success so far to our local community, our local people, our local fellow businesses. And although we are predominantly an e-commerce store now, I think that it's really important for us to be here in Taos.
Angelo and Jacqueline McCorse met in 2007 in Durango, Colorado during move-in day at the dorms as freshmen at Fort Lewis College. Since then, they have traveled all over the world together and are now happy to be raising their toddler and developing their business here in Taos. Find out more about their journey at bisonstarnaturals.com. Coming up, Maya Torres of Studio 107B tells us about the history of her gallery on the corner of Taos Plaza. But first, here's some music. K-Vaults on the Moon in New Mexico is the debut album from Tan Cologne, a project by interdisciplinary artists Lauren Green and Marissa Macias. The two met in Taos and have been exploring musical and creative terrains together ever since. The album was recorded in two unique spaces, a more than 250-year-old historic adobe fortress located in Ranchos de Taos Plaza, and a small hippie casita in northern New Mexico. The title track, Cave Vaults on the Moon in New Mexico, was inspired from Taos composer Joanne Foreman's 1987 soundscape. Foreman's composition, Cave Vaults of the Moon, accompanied a sculpture exhibition in Taos on imagined alien artifacts, an idea that resonates with Tan Cologne. Welcome back to the TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea, and today we're thinking about spaces. Earlier, we talked to Jacqueline and Angelo McHorse of Bison Star Naturals about the construction of their new workshop space at Taos Pueblo. We talked with Gregory Farah about people sharing space at art exhibitions. And now we're going to hear from Maya Torres. She's an artist and the owner of Studio 107B, a gallery on the corner of Taos Plaza. Torres follows in the footsteps of her mother, gallerista and owner of New Directions Gallery, which was in the same location for 17 years. Could you tell us about the history of the space that is now Studio 107B and the history that really starts, I think, with your grandparents?
Right. Well, I'm sure it was something before. I believe the north side of the plaza, there was a fire in 1912, and they rebuilt the buildings. I think there was a hotel at one point in that space. So it was actively always having people come and go. And then I believe in the 40s, my grandparents, Arturo y Teodora Martinez y Salazar, they had a bar called the Fernandez de Taos Tavern and Bar. And then next door, they had a bookstore and magazines. They sold books and liquor and cigars, tobacco. And then they had the bar next door. In the back, it was kind of a more of a lounge. And then in front, it was known as Tano's Bar. And Tano was the bartender. He was this wonderful guy who was not tall in stature, but really could handle a full wild scene from the Wild West. And so Tano ran the bar, and my grandfather Arturo and my grandmother Teodora kind of did the details of how the bar goes. There was a lot of activity going on, entertainment-wise, I know that. There was a man named Ramon Hernandez who regularly played in the back lounge, so it was kind of known as Ramon's Lounge. And I had one day Ramon's son came in, and as a keeper of some of the songs that Ramon had written in those days, and it would be wonderful to have him play in that same space at one point, you know. And then back in the day, my mom was Maria Benitez's first dance teacher in ballet. And then when Maria became better known, there was flamenco dancing happening there. And I know that poetry was more impromptu that happened there. Maybe in the drunken moment, somebody like maybe my dad would get on top of a table and sing a song or recite poetry. I know that their friend came in, Lillian Quintana came in with a bottle that my dad had downed on top of a table at the bar, and with the little story that went with the bottle. So that bottle is now in the gallery at Studio 107B. So that place there was actively kind of a center hub for people for a long time. So I guess since the early 1900s, if not before. And that area of the plaza where Juan Largo Lane, which used to be an open lane, where Chocolá is now and Mesa's Edge and Manzanita are, it was a really active thoroughfare at one point, and it didn't get closed off till recently. So that area of the plaza was really more active with more traffic. You know, at that time, there were four bars on the plaza, and we're still trying to dig up some information and photographs to somehow display. Then at that space, at one point in the late 70s, Bill Whaley rented it from my grandfather on a handshake deal, and they had a bar called The Lounge there. And it, I was kind of a teenager and didn't really go in at that time, so I didn't really know what was happening. But I think that the bar in itself was kind of the heartbreaker bar, because I know a lot of people will come in and say, oh my God, I had to come pull my uncle or my father or somebody out of the bar and take them home because they were there long past the time that they were supposed to. But that area just was just hopping. La Cocina Bar was next door.
Yeah.
And then it transformed in the 80s. I think it became a poster company. Arlene Bernard changed it, and posters were really hip back then. And art, too, collecting was really hip. And people were buying art, and if they couldn't buy art, they were going to buy the poster of that artist. And Arlene Bernard had a place called the Poster Company, I think, Deborah Villalobos worked there, and it was quite successful. And then at a certain point, my mom decided she wanted to open a gallery. So she then opened New Directions Gallery in that same space.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you here, but I was wondering if you knew why that shift happened, why your mom, the idea or the inspiration, let's open a gallery.
It was then in the 80s, a different, more economically fluid time for artists. Yeah. A lot of people from Oklahoma, Texas, more so than California, were coming here, and they loved buying Western landscapes and Roy Wagner's and R.C. Gorman's and, you know, Ray Vanilla was part of that crowd, the Tao Six, and it was really happening. So my mom came in at a point where my dad was in between jobs and retired, and she decided she wanted to do something on her own. And so she had always really admired the art scene of Taos in the 1950s and grew up around Agnes Martin and Louis Riebeck, and B. Mandelman were neighbors to them. So she wanted to do a really upscale, more contemporary, and she liked non-objective work more so. And she only had about 12 artists in the gallery at that time. Ted Agri, Larry Bell, Bill Gersh, Ann Holly, Linda Tosh, Ron Cooper, you know, she kind of traded people here and there. Cliff Harmon was part of the group, and she did changing shows every month. And then she would have a really big shindig 3 times a year and focus on the artists with big ads. And I have some videos of those openings, which we really should get together and put on a disc, because there are people like Tom Noble and Rory Wagner and Esteban Arellanes all in the same room with Larry Bell and R.C. Gorman, and just so many people that were the old Taos legends that were still actively working in Taos.
Right.
So that they were really fun happenings. So that space has just always been kind of a place, I guess, for gatherings and for people to hang out and exchange ideas through art.
And that kind of brings me, I was thinking about this, the term gallery or art gallery. One way to define that is like a space for viewing and buying and selling art. Now, that said, Studio 107B, and of course other galleries are like this too, is much more than that.
Yeah. And Mom had a real traditional gallery in a sense, where the wall was up on the walls. And I, on occasion, she would host poetry and music, and that is really important, I think, to encompass all the disciplines and not be so removed and isolated per discipline. I mean, theater does that naturally because you have to. It takes music, it takes sculpture, it takes dance and all that talent to remember all those lines. Good grief, I don't know how people do that. But anyway, I mean, just like you know, the backstage is a huge production. And then it comes down like a mandala, a Tibetan mandala. Everything goes away like it kind of never happened. And maybe there's leftover props and stuff. But so Studio 107B, I really envisioned it as a studio space where it was more multidisciplinary, multicultural. And we were having great success with that. And when COVID hit, then, you know, it changed everything, not so much as it did for theater, but it changed a lot in terms of not being able to host the gallery's openings like we were. So I've kind of fished out for doing online shows with a little bit of response, but not that much. I think we're all kind of confused. And we're still, like on the weekends, I'll open the space, and Terry Ellis and Shambu will come in and play jazz, and Danielle and Adrian, they wrote some oracle cards, and they'll come and do some readings. We stopped that for a while because the spike went up. And we have about 6 people that are allowed in the gallery at the time with masks on. And what I did was bring my studio from Carson in to town. And so basically it's like a studio/gallery. And People are finding it a more relaxed space to walk through, I'm finding. Walking around or on the art by accident, but
so people are you like working? More fun. You're working in the space.
So I work it in the gallery more after hours because people walking in and talking and there's just that shift and people want normalcy. Art is pretty much hands off anyway. And so we're having still musicians just kind of come anyway. Like it gravitate, the space brings people. So this space in this time is still getting people to come. A young man named Teo came the other day and he has this hand pan drum. And he sat out and played this hand pan drum. It was very melodic and it kind of touched your cellular cords. And I was about 10. He walks in and say, hey, can I play this here? Like, sure. And he sat there and probably made $50 in half an hour. And so the space draws people. It draws creative people. People will come in and then spontaneous events will happen or people will just recite poetry. Now we have Patricio Trujillo Fuentes Papel Picado pieces up that are part of the Paseo and 516 project, The Windows. So those are up in Michael Gorman's gallery and also in the brewery.
Yeah.
So it's still, the space just is kind of surprising to me that it does that.
Could you be anywhere in the world, have a space like that, and create what you're creating? Or do you feel like it's really tied to this specific place, this location on the corner of the plaza?
I think there's something ancestral about it, for sure. You know, I think I would much rather, I mean, be lazy and be in the mountains making art with the garden. And it's been really, though, quite spectacular to deal with people from all over the world. And the minute I walked in that space, because after Mom had her gallery, then Frank Seckler was in there for many, many years. Frank didn't have big openings and stuff, but he had a lot of his furniture work in there. And he was part of the core group when we opened. And so that energy is just strangely there. And that when I walked in after Frank left, I felt like my ancestors were in the back, like tapping their toes and saying, now it's your turn, you know, now it's your turn to be in this space. It's your generation. Take the helm. And I'm like, wait a minute. No. I'm not a captain of a ship, you know. It's not. But the spirit call, that ancestral voice was really loud. And it's a surprise to me that it's coming through that space again, but it wants to be a hub for creativity. Taos is a hub for creativity in the world. And we need to still recognize that it's not just a rural space and it's not just the kickoff north of Santa Fe. Taos draws some really, really amazing genius minds. And that recognition that we can showcase that is really important to me. And that's what Taos is about, right? It's about that gathering of those kind of creative spirits. And to me, that's why we're here, you know, just to create. And that space wants that to happen there. It feels like it's a vortex. It's really odd to come to this one corner.
Well, it makes me think a little bit about the phrase reading the room, which we usually apply to, you know, you walk into a room, there's a group of people there and you get a certain vibe of energy really coming off the people. Do you feel that when you walk in there and it's just you and the space, or?
Yeah, there's a lot of spirits. I think as New Mexicans, we just believe, you know, what was that door opening? Oh, those ghosts are just coming in, right? So they're there. There's one corner where people will be standing and feel presences of their ancestors in that corner. That was an unknown thing. I didn't think that was going to happen. I mean, I really thought it was going to be, the space was going to be more of a standard gallery with, you know, events here and there. I didn't quite realize it was going to be this area where that spins creativity. And not all of it is positive, I'll say that. You know, sometimes there's some dark energies that come through. So we keep smudging, you know.
Yeah.
I'll ask my friends who are real powerful in that way to come smudge every once in a while that area. I think, you know, back in the history of Taos, it was really violent. There were a lot of sad deaths around the plaza that maybe still haunt that area, you know.
Yeah.
We try and keep the higher vibrations going. And now with space, just in terms of COVID, now we're so aware of where we are. Like, I think normal is like 3 to 4 feet apart. Now we like have to be 6 feet apart. So then when sometimes you'd be talking to someone and you're aware, oh my God, we're like 4 feet apart. Oh, so we take a step back, or, you know, is it okay to touch elbows anymore? You know?
Yeah. That's Maya Torres, artist and owner of Studio 107B. We'll hear more from Maya about the balance of human activity around valuable objects and the renaissance of 2020. Before the break, let's listen to another track from Tan Cologne. The song Alien is described as telling of a visitation. It is a prediction of what may occur when contact from outer space is made. It speaks of new faces, new age, dimensions colliding, cults forming, mind control, and water levels rising. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. We just heard the beginning of the song Empty Vessels by Tan Cologne. Tan Cologne describes this song as more of a chant. It depicts an experience of a ship or vessel that is moving through uncontrollable weather, while the occupants wait below deck. The idea is that the music carries the listener throughout the experience of a storm, where the outcome is completely unknown. We'll listen to the rest of the song a little later. First, let's get back to my conversation with Mae Torres. She owns Studio 107B, which sits on the corner of Taos Plaza, right off Juan Largo Lane. Her family has ties to the space, going back to when her grandparents ran a tavern there in the 40s. During that time and since then, the space has been attracting creative minds and ideas. Here's Mae describing the Renaissance of 2020 and how the ancestors are running the show.
I'm going to present some song sketches, these songs I've been working on, which will be interesting and a new kind of movement for me. I'm really scared of that.
Well, good luck.
So it's hope that 107B, that we can continue running it, you know. I have been reaching out and writing for grants. We luckily did receive a small grant from the Small Business Administration, and that was really important. So I'm looking into the private sector and also grants and different kinds of loans.
Yeah.
So we can keep going.
Yeah.
Because it's important now. I mean, there are going to be a lot of businesses that are going to fold, you know, and I want to hold the fort in a sense, you know, for some creative ideas, not just art. Recycling, for example, or agriculture in the valley. Let's resume that, you know.
Yeah. And I'm curious, kind of going back to thinking about the gallery space, the idea of a gallery space. Has there been any positive thing about this time and what that's meant for you and 107B?
Yeah, it's been really, I always kind of envisioned a renaissance happening in 2020, and we are putting it out around the world and through social media that artists just come out with their best work in 2020, and then the world made us shut down. The world made us be introverted. So I'm hoping that the space at 107B can still be through online. We do have a website that was beautifully designed by Sea Dreams by Nick and Kyle Mossman. So we have some presence online. We're doing Instagram, and I'll do some just walkthroughs on Instagram and Facebook. So pretend you're, I'm working on this today, and put the music up and just do a 30 seconds, something short. Because people are feeling hurried and not centered now. So these little clips of art viewing are kind of fun. We are making some sales. I'm so thankful about that there are patrons out there recognizing that artists are still probably producing more than ever right now and yet don't have that source of income that they might. So we're always so thankful and grateful for patrons that reach out and just go buy some artwork and or, you know, pay their light bill. Something like that, you know, that could buy some groceries so they can keep working, because the Renaissance is happening now. So I hope that the Studio 107B space can kind of be a center for Renaissance 2020 in terms of magical ideas that can happen in this creative hub of the world called Taos. And if we can let our barriers down as people, if we can let our racial hatredness go and those divisions go, that would be really awesome. We can set a standard for the world.
We've just talked a lot about how the engagement and the exchanging of ideas and the sharing of music, poetry, food. Have you found over the years the limits or the human presence and the presence of those objects just kind of meld together? Or sometimes do you find limits there?
Oh, that's interesting. And then it's all interesting. Yeah, when you get the gatherings, and Annette Turan will make this fabulous food for these openings, and there's red chili, and there's a $50,000 painting that's unframed right there, and you just have this trust that, you know, it's that no one's going to spill the red wine, which I have done at art openings, you know. And a lot of artists don't put the glass in front of their art anymore. So there is a risk there.
Yeah.
And, you know, spills do happen. It's interesting. The carpet shows the history, too, you know. But, you know, thank God for carpet cleaners. You know, that's no biggie. There is interesting... the conversation of the art on the walls and the people in the room with the beautiful food happening, the music that's taking place, it just was magical, you know, and I do want to see it go back to that. So yeah. We have to shift that to just smaller events. So smaller viewings, more personal kinds of viewings. So by appointment only and or weekends, you know, you can come and listen to the jazz, go to farmer's market and come watch some work in progress. I'm still shifting art. I have some work by some of my colleagues, Brian O'Connor and Iva Morris, who are a painter couple from south of Albuquerque. They're fabulous painters. And then Chris Taylor, who's Elizabeth Taylor's nephew, who lives in San Cristobal. He's a master printmaker in the old copper etching style. So we have some of his prints up. And then Kent Jones, who's just quite a genius in all mediums, and we have some of his absurd pieces and very political, which a lot of people will look at and just walk right out of the space. And that space then becomes an angry space, right? It wasn't the happy space they walked in. Or then that's the space that this family from Oklahoma, he said, I'm a redneck from Oklahoma. And he came in and said, I don't really like art. And he came, his family really liked everything in there. And he was really touched by a deposition piece, which is where they're taking a Christ figure off the cross that I had drawn. And he was touched to tears. And he went out and came back. And he actually sat outside crying, which his son had never seen him do. And so this moved him to a point I didn't know, because I didn't go ask him, hey, dude, what's happening? Why did this move you so much? But that is the power of art, whether it's poetry or theater or a silent piece such as visual art. So they communicate with each other. And I guess when you throw the art of food in there with the nets cooking, you know, then it becomes super magic. And I think the ancestors run the show. I find the artists and make the dates, which is hard, like deadlines.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Do you think people that need to enjoy art with other people?
I think it's really great. Like, you can enjoy a book by yourself, but when you talk with somebody about it, like I saw Marcy the other day, we talked about Pro Black, who's a muralist back east that we saw on a Netflix program, and he's doing these enormous murals that are really uplifting. And so she saw it on her own in isolation, and we're feeling isolated, but we both saw it. We could talk about this artist who's really making a change with his art back in the East Coast. So I think that art is both. Like when you listen to Beethoven in an orchestra with the whole audience, that's really fabulous. And then you can just jack your speakers up in your own home and listen to that same, you know, Fifth Symphony all by yourself in the dark. And that really has impact too. So that's the beauty of that. Art makes us go and takes us to places that are where we should be in a higher self.
That was Maya Torres. Over these recent months, anywhere people tend to gather to do something together have become empty spaces. We've just heard about what's gained from having space to create and sharing space to exchange ideas and to engage with art. We've also learned about space that inhabits a part of Taos history. Here's something from Peter Brook, a passage from the book The Empty Space. Now, the book is about theater and defining its forms. It was published in 1968. So far today, we've talked about gallery and workshop spaces. Still, I think this passage relates to everyone we spoke with today, and also to where I work, the TCA, which is comprised of a 275-seat theater and two gallery spaces, all currently empty, void of humans interacting. Quote, at a time when all sands are shifting, the search is automatically a search for form. The destruction of old forms, the experimenting with new ones, new words, new relationships, new places, new buildings. They all belong to the same process, and any individual production is just a separate shot at an unseen target. It is foolish today to expect any single production, group, style, or line of work to reveal what we're looking for. End quote. Now, the passage continues, and I'm going to go ahead and read it, and this goes out to any theater people out there that are listening. Quote, "The theater can only advance crabwise in a world whose moving forward is as often sideways as backwards. This is why, for a very long time, there cannot possibly be a world style for a world theater, as there was in the theaters and opera houses of the 19th century." End quote. This has been the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. Share this broadcast with friends and family by going to tcataos.org. TCA Radio Hour is brought to you in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor, and our local business partner, Rocky Mountain Youth Corps. And thank you to KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truetaosradio.com. On the way out, enjoy more music from Tan Cologne off their album, Cave Vaults on the Moon in New Mexico. This is Chelsea. Thanks for listening.